Welcome into the second hour of the programme. Thanks for your texts and calls coming in. I appreciate it. Greg, my mother went to knock on pilgrimage 50 years ago and it was disgusting then. Nothing has changed and they're making an absolute fortune. So just a caller before the break there was talking about poor toilet facilities in and around Knock Shrine, and a caller saying half a century ago that problem persisted. Hi, Greg. While I've no issue with Trump's tariffs or immigration positions, no rational human being could support his position on backing the Israeli genocide in Gaza. The recent Stoll warning on the Epstein case raises serious concerns. The Attorney General stated clearly that the Epstein client list was on her desk. Now, she's claiming the entirety of the case was on her desk, not just the list. Pete, that's open to debate. This caller is clearly of the view. She said the list was on her desk. This was raised again by Fox News upon the FBI announcement. The Attorney General also said that there was thousands of hours of video evidence of abuse that was being reviewed, all now apparently vanished. Again, just to be clear, she's done a subsequent interview. She never said it was vanished. She said it's there, the videos are there, but because of the nature of it, child abuse material, it can't be released. But no one questioned her to say, well, you know, was all of it downloaded? Did he create any of it? Is anyone evident in it? But I'll read on from the listener. Epstein was rumoured to be working with Mossad, the Israel Secret Service. Coincidentally, the FBI announcement came the day before Netanyahu's visit to meet Trump this week. Also, the video of Epstein in prison is a full minute removed from the tape. And again, what the Attorney General said is that because they use cassette tapes, seemingly, from 1999, that there's a minute missing every single day. This is what they're claiming, expecting people to believe it, that there's a minute of a video missing every single day because of the way they video it. Anyway, also the video of Epstein in prison has a full minute removed from this tape, and I reference that. Not to mention that Musk and some lesser known others are saying that Trump was in the files. All very murky stuff, and the sudden closure of the case with no prosecution seems very incriminating against Trump. This is one that's not going to go away from the American political scene. But would you not, listener, as well, just your views, I'd be interested in them. If Donald Trump, if Elon Musk can say Trump's on them, Steve Bannon's on them, he mentioned Bill Gates is on them, he's mentioned a whole host of people that are in this. How did he see the list? What list is he talking about? Why won't he reference that? If he has the list, why doesn't he release it? You know, we're talking about child protection here. If he's got information, Elon Musk needs to release all of that information into the public domain, and no one seems to be calling him on that, which I don't understand. A caller says there's been no consultation with local communities on where the broadband poles are being erected, so suddenly beauty spots are destroyed like Glengesh. Why is it always the cheapest option, cables on wooden poles instead of underground alongside roads? Yeah. People will see that potentially as a very legitimate question. Regarding public toilets, I'm a cleaner in an office and sometimes I wonder at so-called educated people leaving toilets in the state that they leave them in. People need to be held accountable too. Definitely, I am a big advocate of self-responsibility as well. More on the toilets. The toilets in the church in Ballybrack in Greencastle are kept immaculate by one lady who volunteers. The toilets are on church grounds, but they're public. Well, fair play to that person. Michael Kavanagh was on Highland Radio on Monday night with his 8 grandchildren. Congratulations to Michael and his grandchildren for their wonderful music. I didn't get a chance to look that back. On TikTok, I stumbled across a family called the Clark family. I'm not sure where they're from, but it's a dad, 2 sons and a daughter. And if you're on TikTok, they're probably on other platforms as well. Well worth checking them out. I don't believe they're Irish. I think they're American. But the kids are only young, but they love playing music. The smiles on their faces. And they're brilliant. And here's a dad. He's got his one son on drums, who's great in drums, another on bass. He's on lead guitar, and he's got a little daughter that sings and dances and plays a bit of keyboard and what have you. If you want your spirits lifted a little bit, check out the Clark family as well on TikTok. But certainly, actually, what am I talking about? Check out our own social media, Highland Radio, where you can watch back the full performance or some clips of Michael Kavanagh and his grandchildren. I want to let you know that on Wellness Wednesday today, we'll be talking to Dr. Dara Reynolds, partner at Errigal Dental. So any dental questions, get them into us now. 086 60 25000. Dara, really good. He answers the questions. He's to the point and concise. Any questions about your teeth, your gums as well? You know, often we only think of, you know, when we talk about dentists, that it's purely the teeth, but obviously it's dental work, crowns, your gums, gum health, etc. So any questions for our dentist, Dr. Dara Reynolds, as it relates to health care of your mouth, 086 60 25,000. Get them into us now, because there will be a rush and I want to make sure I get through everyone today. I have a sister who went to the hospital last week as she's a stroke victim. The toilets in the hospital are a disgrace. Never mind public toilets. This is our hospital. We need cleanliness in our hospital. I've used the toilets in the hospital on a number of occasions. I always find them to be very clean. Caroline, do we get many complaints about the state of the toilets in the hospital? It's sometimes someone... Yeah, okay. As Caroline just said in my ear, there may be ED when it's busy, but you could have someone that's gone in there and they could have a condition that means they're vomiting, or and you might go in like a minute behind them. I'm not making excuses for the hospital, but my experience is they're clean, and I'm just wondering if it's when the ED is very busy at certain times of the day and maybe someone's gone in there and they don't have full control of vomiting or something else for that matter. I don't know. Let us know. A couple of requests here now. Joe Friel's in Letterkenny and he's 70 today. Happy birthday, Joe. That comes from everyone at the Breakfast Club. Sounds cool. I'd love a bit of breakfast. Good morning. Please play a request for my youngest sister, Anne McHugh, who's holidaying in Port New, and wish her a very happy birthday today. And we'll catch up with her this evening. Sounds like a lovely evening in store. Charlie and Isabel and all the senior Barrett group. Welcome back to Donegal, Anne. And hopefully you're here for the weekend where we're going to have beautiful weather. Our county, isn't it always beautiful, but extra special, I think, when the sun is shining. To Paul and Sinead O'Brien, they're in Chestnut Grove in Lifford. Hiya, Paul. Hi, Sinead. Have a happy wedding anniversary today from Paul's mum and dad, and the mum and dad-in-law as well. What are they like, Sinead? Are they good? Are they good to you? All right, that's a run through some of the comments, and nice to get a couple of your requests too. Okay, Ruth Kavanagh, tattoo artist and owner of Zombie Dolls Tattoo Parlor, 15 years in business. I think any business to get it to 15 years, an amazing achievement. So congratulations on that, Ruth. It's a great milestone.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's pretty insane. 15 years.
It's fantastic. Why do people get tattoos in your experience?
Why do people get tattoos? There is definitely more than one answer to that. I think a lot of people get tattooed usually as a commemorative piece or a memorial piece. That seems to be the most common sort of thing that would happen. You know, people getting little tributes to children or a lost loved one or a lost pet. And then some of us, you know, we just like getting tattooed and we like the look of it. So, and either reason, any reason is valid, really.
So the majority might be, you know, an image or a word or a date that's important to them to commemorate a nana or a papa, mum or dad or a son or daughter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, in some cases it's very minimal, very small, very delicate. And in some cases, it can be larger pieces, you know, and it would incorporate things maybe that remind them of people rather than just an actual word or the actual image. We'd use something that would commemorate them, you know, a toy that reminds them of a child or, you know, flowers. Birth flowers are a very traditional thing to get done, you know, in all styles, in colour, black and grey, whatever, you know.
What's the oldest person ever came into you with for their first tattoo?
The oldest person, that I have a current client who is in their 70s.
Get in there.
Her first tattoo at 70, and they're still going.
Right, okay. And I don't, because it's one person and you've given their age, but why would someone wait to that age? I wonder, is it to express themselves? They just said, you know what, I'd just be interested in the mindset. That sounds like it's a major decision, right? But, you know, is it about a liberation? Is it about, I don't know, what would make someone do it at that age? I wonder.
I think as we get a little older, we care a little bit less about what people think.
Yeah. And
I think society has us in a way where we have to feel like we have to conform an awful lot. And, you know, a lot of people think maybe tattooing is for the more rebellious or whatever, you know.
But it did normalise, didn't it? I mean, I think there was a point where that was what it was about, that it would maybe, you know, it was seen as, you know, it was seen as being a bit, you know, a free thinker, I'm out my own. But now it's not like it is. It is. You've got people from all different backgrounds and what have you, for all different reasons, getting tattoos.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a point in time where, and a demographic where it would be a more rebellious statement. And then there's always been through time, like, I mean, tattooing has been going for thousands and thousands of years, from, you know, tribal tattoos, where it would have been leaders of tribes and stuff who had the tattoos, who incidentally were women. And that's been going through, like, even I would say in the 19th century, the people primarily getting tattooed were the very well off and the royalty. And it was to display their culture and their travels. So it would mark, you know, things that they have done, and it would symbolize their sort of, I don't know, how many times they had traveled. And, you know, maybe that's, you know, that's also the connection people maybe think with the Navy and stuff like that, that whole time of navies and sailors. And
oh, the anchor. Well, that's the old Popeye thing from the 1920s, isn't it? You know, the anchor on the forearm. Is getting a tattoo painful? And is it less or more painful on soft skin, or if there's bone behind the skin?
That's an interesting question. Honestly, everybody's pain threshold is different. So there is no set rule on what is or isn't painful. There's a rough guideline on what could be more painful, but sometimes people come in and you're like going, oh, you're getting a piece on this certain area, like your ribs. It might hurt a little bit, and they could be absolutely fine. Mm. There could be nothing, you know. But, you know, you can prepare yourself to be, you know, when you're coming for a tattoo appointment, by moisturizing your skin. And just mentally, if you stay sort of nice and calm and relaxed, the more relaxed and calming the environment, I feel like people are more likely to be more comfortable in the situation. And, you know, a lot of times as well, some of the smaller pieces, they don't take long, you know, maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody who's going to be sitting in the chair for 6 hours. You know,
and I suppose too, it's like your tattoo location and your design, your pain threshold, your tolerance. It's all subjective, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it's down to whether your health is good, whether you've slept well that night, whether you've got something coming up that you're also anxious about. So there's like so many factors that can contribute to whether it's sort of pain free or, you know, a little bit nippy. But I do have some, you know, numbing aids that can help.
Yeah, okay, that sounds cool. And so over the course of the 15 years, and of course your interest in this area predates that, what trends, and I don't mean necessarily in terms of design, but or maybe it could be design, but design, location, the demographic, I don't know. Like what has changed in the business over the 15 years to now that's most notable to you?
So I think it being more accessible has opened it up to many different types of people. Do you know, social media has really broadened the demographic like so much. I can't even say specifically what my sort of age would be.
But that's great, you know, isn't it?
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So basically anybody over the age of 18 up until whatever age they want to get tattooed is seeing what's going on now. And they can also see that the idea of like a traditional tattoo, maybe what we would have thought of in the 90s or prior, of maybe tribal or just traditional American tattooing, which is the one with the very bold lines, that's not the only thing that can be done now. Mm. There are people creating like paintings on skin, you know.
How is that done? So say someone gets the image of, sometimes it could be a religious figure or it could be a family member, right? So when you see an actual a representation of a picture of a child, for instance, you see that quite commonly, and it literally is like a painting. Is that still the same tried and tested? It's individual dots of ink, or is there a different way of doing it? Do you do it over? Do you put something on someone's arm or thigh, for instance, and then and trace over it? Or how? Because it seems incredibly complex.
It is complex. It's very hard.
Yeah, I was thinking.
And obviously, it takes a lot of skill and a lot of practice to get to that level to be able to reproduce as it would in an oil painting. But when we are tattooing somebody, we use a stencil. And that guides us, because when you're tattooing, you stretch the skin. And if you stretch the skin and just go in with what you think might be a straight line, when you let go of that skin, it is no longer a straight line. So when you have a stencil that you've made to guide you, you do it. Some people do it by where the features are on a portrait. Some people do it where the shadowing falls on a portrait. And they have their own method then of guiding them to reproduce the piece. So It's very similar to oil painting. The way I would work anyway, it's very similar to oil painting to reproduce something like a portrait.
Yeah, but there's nothing in the world of art. I can't imagine, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio. Leonardo da Vinci sort of, trying to conduct one of his works of art on something that's squishy and moving and can stretch and contract. And
it's very difficult. So, I mean, it's kind of the same process, you know, mentally as far as how you apply color and color theory and all that kind of thing. So like today I'm reproducing pretty much like a Baroque style painting on somebody and it's a cover up.
Excellent. Well, I won't stress you out too much
today.
So when I was talking about trends a little earlier on, I remember when I was younger, you would see it'd be quite common for girls or women to have a tattoo at the base of their back, for an example. Are things like that less popular? So do you see like maybe people are more inclined to get something on the inside of their arm below their elbow now than maybe at the base of their back, or is that still in vogue? Or do people not follow trends and they just kind of go with what they want?
It's kind of both. There's definitely trends. I would usually, when I'm talking with a client before I do their tattoo, I try and figure out what the purpose of the tattoo is. And if they really just want to go for something that's like more fashion or trend based, that's absolutely fine. And if it's more like a memorial or more of, let's call it an important piece, I would steer away from a trend.
I get you. I get where you're coming from. And also, too, you take your duty of care very, very seriously, don't you, in terms of location, age, thinking it through. That's really quite important to you, isn't it? Talk to me a little bit about that.
So I feel that, firstly, it's very important that obviously our hygiene levels are up to standard and that we know what we're doing and everything is clean and hygienic so that our client feels safe. And then it's very important to consider the age of the person. Sometimes their occupation, you know, if somebody very young is coming in and they want like a forehead tattoo or a neck tattoo and they have no other work, it's definitely a no for me. You know, it's like I would consider how being tattooed could affect them. Now it's less sort of how would you put it? It's less impactful now, I think, where, you know, a lot of people are quite heavily tattooed, you know, some that you mightn't even expect. But, you know, I wouldn't go out of my way to purposely do something that I think could have an effect on somebody in a negative manner.
And I think even in someone with your experience, even having that conversation might give the person pause for thought. And you probably then from that point can make a further assessment, you know, because I think sometimes we do something when we're younger because we feel we can't do it. You know, well, dad wouldn't like that or mom wouldn't like that or I was never allowed to do this. But then I go in and sit in front of you and, you know, you're an expert and you've done this stuff. And I go, oh, right, okay, well, maybe there's a logical reason for that or something along those lines. Do you think the industry is as responsible as you are across the board? I mean, is any industry the same across the board? But no. Do you have any concerns in that regard?
I think some people are maybe, you know, a little bit thoughtless when they have less knowledge of the whole area of tattooing. And, you know, we all have to learn and we all have to gather information. So I just would recommend that when people are coming to get a tattoo, that they do a little bit of research beforehand and make sure that the place they are going to has, you know, a clean environment, they're hygienic and they are aware and concerned for their clients' welfare, basically. And always check a portfolio. Always check that it's the actual artist's portfolio. And make sure, you know, that you vibe with your artist, you know. You know, we're not going to get on with everybody and our clients aren't going to get on with every tattoo artist. You know, not everyone is a match. And that's absolutely fine. You know, if somebody is coming to me and they're looking for a large Japanese back piece, I'm not going to do it.
You don't do Japanese stuff. Why is that?
I feel like that there are other people who do it much better than I do. And then I do other things better than somebody who maybe specializes in Japanese.
Yeah, interesting. That's an honesty, yeah, though, that not everyone might have, I would suggest. If people are doing cover-up tattoos, generally what would they be covering up?
So we get a lot of a little cartoon characters from the 90s, a lot of tribal. And then, you know, obviously there's those occasions where people have gotten names.
That's exactly what I was trying to get down to. Thanks for chucking others. But it could be the name of an ex or a date they met, yeah, or an engagement date, stuff like that there.
Yeah. And we just get rid of that. We just move it on.
What would you change Greg into, though? Like, how would you cover that up?
No,
you're all right for now. You're all right for now, I think. But no, you have to, that's where you really probably sometimes need to get your creative juices flowing as to how you can incorporate.
I mean, obviously the size of the cover-up can create difficulty when applying a new tattoo. You know, if it's very dark, you know, we have to be very considerate about what skills and what techniques will cover it. It's not always done in one stage. If somebody has a large tribal on their arm, it absolutely, I can cover it.
But what is a tribal? Because
so tribal is when you referred to earlier, like what women you'd have got on the lower back as, yeah, tramp stamp, the black wavy lines. If you can recall George Clooney in From Dusk Till Dawn, the big black wavy lines, they actually have no real meaning or design. They're just more to take up space. Would have been just look cool in the 90s. And a lot of, you know, guys around my age now are coming in and they've got this tribal and they're like, oh, you know, get rid of it.
Right, okay. And what's the easiest thing for you to sort of metamorphosize that into?
There is no easy thing.
Yeah,
it's
right.
More about distracting the eye and distracting the brain from what was previously there. And I've sort of got my own technique where I will use what I call opaque inks, which are not see-through. A lot of tattoo inks are transparent and we'll go over it so it's like a solid color piece, but a lot of the time it's a black and gray solid.
Yeah.
And get rid of the old tattoo by just putting, most of the time we can do whatever they want over it, but we just have to be very careful and considerate of where the elements go.
Yeah.
So we get the best coverage, you know, as possible.
Well, we have your 70-year-old client beaten. My mum is 83 and she recently got a tattoo and she did it just because she loved a little flower and wanted it done to match with her grandson. He wanted it and he convinced her to do it, which I think is lovely.
I think that's gorgeous. There's a lot of that. I get a lot of mums and daughters and I get a lot of, you know, little sort of partner tattoos, friend tattoos and stuff like that. But a lot more like mums and grands are coming in with daughters and sons and grandchildren. And I love that.
Right. Let's get to the bottom of it. What one of the more unusual one was a portrait on someone's butt. Tell me more about that.
Yeah.
Was it a famous person or was it a loved one or what?
No,
I don't know. What do I want to be on someone's butt?
On someone's arse.
Huh?
Yeah. And it was, you know, yeah, it was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to be careful where you're pulling when you're looking to stretch the skin.
Don't go there, dude.
All right, okay. Have you ever got like people come, football clubs? Do people get football stuff done over here much? You know, you see that quite a lot in Britain.
Like, not as much as you would maybe expect. Like, I think maybe a couple of years back, maybe about 10 years ago, there would have been more call for like the football stuff. And, you know, we'd still get like some family crests and things like that, but not as much as... you know, a couple of years back. But, you know, I'm open to everything because I do, I'm a multi-style artist. I do a lot of styles apart from Japanese.
Exactly. Akola has Parkinson's. Akola has Parkinson's and would love to have a tattoo. Can they do so with that condition?
That would be something where I would have the person come in and we would have a talk about it and we would see what the possibilities were.
Yeah.
It's usually, unless you're under 18... it's usually not a no. It's a let's talk about it.
Yeah, okay.
So I would usually have the person in person consultation and we would talk and discuss things and see how it goes from there.
Is your artistry transferable? Like, in other words, can you do watercolors, oil paintings, you know, facial? Yeah. Is it a different type of art or the same?
I feel that having a good foundation in art has really stood to me when I'm tattooing because I'm I've always been an artist, you know, so I would have trained doing watercolors and oil paintings. And I've always worked as an artist since a very young age. So it's definitely beneficial. I do still oil paint. I don't do watercolors as much now, but I would still, you know, get the pens and ink out.
I'm getting vibes too that you are very creative with wood. Am I mental?
No,
I don't know. What I'm getting, is it all metal? Something to do with
metal? I'm a goldsmith.
And are you? I didn't know that. I was just getting the vibe off you that that was something you'd be good at.
I had a shop in Killybegs for a long time, and I would have made some national awards, you know, the National People of the Year awards and stuff like that.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Yeah. All right. Super talented. This remarkable achievement, as I say, 15 years in business and doing it right as well. And it's just interesting to talk about something. Well, I was going to say a little bit different, but it's not a little bit different, but it's still not necessarily a convo that's had too often. So it's been lovely chatting to you, Ruth. Thanks so much and continued success and good luck with the cover-up. You've never misspelled a name by accident. You're not going to tell us any blunders, are you?
Oh, no, you signed a waiver coming in here. I'm not responsible for your...
You do see some... but now in this day and age, you see some brilliant ones, but you wonder, are they AI-generated now? I don't know.
Possibly.
All right, take care of yourself, Ruth. Thanks
Thank
very
you
much indeed.
Much, Greg,
bye-bye. Take care, Slán. Bye-bye. Okay, a caller says, we went on holiday and my mate got tattooed. He thought it was his name, but it was actually Chinese for Chow Mein. It's been his nickname ever since. He's been called Chow Mein ever since. Lol. Have you any witty tattoo stories for us, please? 086 60 25,000. We've an 83-year-old that got their first tattoo. We'd love to beat that as well. Why wouldn't you? You know, sometimes people feel like, I've spent my whole life trying to conform, you know, and I want to do something for me. Why don't I? Another caller, sorry, I just got this. How much does it cost to get a hummingbird in full colour on the shoulder? It's difficult when we've guests on sort of ask about price lists, because it's going to be complex in terms of how much colour, how big, bish bash bosh. So definitely give Ruth a ring at her business, or any art tattoo artist for that matter. But Ruth is Zombie Dolls Tattoo Parlor, and they'll tell you over the phone, I'm sure. So any holiday tattoo stories, we've got Chow Mein. I'm not sure if he's listening, but certainly his mate is, or anything like that. A caller asks, is it bad manners to stare at tattoo? That's interesting. I don't know, any tattoo owners there, do you mind if people stare at your tattoos? Keep them coming into us. 086 60 25,000. Now, you may have heard on the news or read on our website that residents' associations could be held responsible for damage or injuries caused by trees falling within their estates. The topic came up at the Letterkenny Municipal District. Councillor Jerry McMonagall said, with increased weather warnings around climate change, etc., and warnings of more severe weather conditions in the future, the risk posed by trees needs to be assessed. So, what does this all mean? Brendan Delap joins us on the programme now. He's part of a residents' association. Brendan, thanks for your time.
Hello, Greg. First of all, I'd say that, you know, I don't want to be a person that rings on about every issue, but after hearing the news yesterday evening, I felt really compelled to ring in. As you're aware, I spoke to you regarding the act of travel recently, and my disappointment at the scheme not been deferred. Now, to me, that's a fine example of the purpose of a resident association, you know, to try and enhance and protect the area. Now, the news yesterday suggested that the residents could find themselves liable for damage or injury.
Or someone's occurring. Death, for that matter. So that really means it's the maintenance of the trees, because if you're responsible for someone being injured if they were to fall, that means then you're ultimately responsible for them from when they plant to when they might fall.
Yeah, but it's a wee bit extraordinary that most of the trees they're talking about were planted by the council, you know?
Yeah.
And like, if trees are deemed dangerous, then it's up to the council to monitor them and take action. You know, I feel now that we should really decommission the Residents Association. I feel that bad about it, because if we're going to be liable for injury or any claim, it's not sustainable to stay in it.
No, you know? Because it is completely voluntary, isn't it? I mean, I know there's structures, but it is groups of residents with an interest in their area coming together to try and, you know, work towards... you know, they're good upkeep. This isn't about all of a sudden finding yourself in the papers or on a website accused of being responsible for someone's back being broken.
Well, you can, you can take it to the Neighbourhood Watch Scheme. That's administered through the Residents Association. That's, I think it's essential that you have to have a Residents Association before you can set up a Garda Neighbourhood Watch. So when this estate or any estate in the town was deemed adequate, the council took over the estates. That, you know, it's there. It's up to them to look and see the public ground that's on it to maintain and look
who
after.
Who owns the public ground in an estate? Because what I heard, the quote I heard from yesterday, it said the landowner is responsible for taking all reasonable steps to ensure that trees on their land are not a hazard or potential hazard to persons using the public roads. Now, if that were my house, I know the situation, I know a potential tree, I might need to cut it down. But does that same rule not apply if the tree is actually in your back garden or facing the road? Is that not reasonable that you should be responsible for that?
Oh, yeah, that is in the private house. But then the public ground or the, what would you call them?
The green areas?
Green areas, yeah. Mm. They should be maintained by the council.
Well, who owns them? I wonder, Brendan.
If we own them, we could sell them, but I don't think we do own them.
So, this is the thing. Like, I just wonder if... I seek clarification on this, but I can't understand how in law... I mean, I understand if you're responsible, for your property, what's on your land, your trees, I get that. And I think we can't shirk that responsibility.
But then the
law says the landowner is responsible for taking all reasonable steps to ensure trees in their land is not a hazard. Well, the green areas on an estate that's taken over, surely that is the council's property and it's they that are responsible.
Greg, I agree entirely with every single word you say. But, you know, to hear that yesterday, then I'll be honest, it sent a shockwave up me because, you know, it's just the tip of the iceberg. The council don't come in and grit. So if a resident grits an area and they miss a bit, could they be held liable? Yeah. You know, it's just opened up Pandora's box for me. So, you know, what we need really is for every resident association in the town now needs to get assurances in writing that under no circumstances should a resident association find itself probably liable for injury or claim for which it is no way responsible.
If I could just go back to the gritting thing, if the council is responsible for... If the council are responsible for speed limits in a housing estate, how can they not be responsible for the upkeep of the road in that estate or liable for its gritting and what have you? I don't understand that.
Well, you see, this is cutbacks galore. Mm. Most of the estates in the town were swept and weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And the, God rest poor Eamon Harvey, used to come down. I live in a hill now and it's fairly steep. But Eamon, no bother, every night of the frost, he'd be down gritting the road. And all that was withdrawn, as was the cutting of grass and public areas and things. So, you know, you start to wonder what are the council doing for the...
Well, I'd say a lot of that went you know? Away with the town councils. If you looked at timelines, I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, yeah, that's a fair point. Mm. But the town council has been replaced by a council.
No, I get you. I'm just that I think
you know they just couldn't. Yeah. But Greg, they just can't throw previous responsibilities out the window.
Right. Okay. You know? Listen, I think it's incredibly important at this point. Logic would suggest to me that the green areas of a council or an estate are owned by the council. They're responsible for the trees. If you plant a cherry tree or whatever tree in your garden, Brendan, you're responsible for that. I think that's the way society needs to run. I can't imagine residents are responsible for the maintenance of trees in green areas. I'm open to correction on that. I don't know what the story is. Who owns green areas in private estates? That's one I'd be concerned about.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, but there's very few private estates left.
Is there?
You know,
okay, good stuff. All right.
Them over the years. So
okay.
That
thanks,
really
Brendan.
A runner.
No, that's good, and I appreciate that. It's not an area I'm overly familiar with, but logic would suggest to me that you're responsible for your backyard, the council responsible for green areas. I don't think that's unreasonable. Let's see. Obviously, Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh and Councillor Jerry McMonagle had their concerns, and we'll try and get clarity on it for the likes of yourself, Brendan.
Oh, well, my intention now at the moment after hearing that yesterday is to decommission the Resin Association.
Well, hold your fire. I get where you're coming from, but hold your fire until we get some clarification, Brendan. Cheers, buddy. Yeah. Thanks so much for your time. Take care. Good to speak to you again. It's important. We don't mind repeat callers. A caller says, the contract that built my estate claims the common areas and trees belong to them, even though it's built 35 years. Well, that's great, because they're responsible now for the trees on them if they claim ownership of the areas. I'm sorry to sort of simplify what came from that meeting, because I would have thought it logical that if you own a house, you own a lawn, you own grass, you're responsible for that and anything on it, and if it should fall onto the road, you're responsible. I don't see any clarification in relation to green areas here, because all of us have to look after our own property, right, and we're responsible for anything falling from it onto public roads. So where's the controversy here? Is it the green areas, or who's responsible? Is it the residents, or is it the council? I'm sure they own them. The council own them, so it's their responsibility. Unless I'm missing something in that story, I'm looking to get more info on it. Paul McLaughlin is our resident gardener here in the 9 till noon show from Ballagdar Garden Centre. Just talking about maintenance of estates. Paul, what's your experience in this area?
Hi, Greg. I just as your previous caller, the news sort of shocked me yesterday about the idea of resident associations being liable for trees and stuff. You know, we would work a lot with resident associations. And generally, they tend to be a very sort of dedicated small group, like, and to make them liable for anything, it just seems been extremely unfair.
Would you be of the view that they should or shouldn't be liable for trees that are actually on their own property?
Oh, within their own property, obviously, if it's within their own private house, if you know what I mean. But in terms of, an estate of 60, 70 houses, like, to make, say, maybe 10 people in a residence association responsible for them now, I don't see how it could stand any logic.
And legally, liable as well, too, which why would anyone volunteer onto a residents' association if they could find themselves being implicated in some way or other?
Absolutely. I would say they've sort of been penalised for trying to help your community, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, okay. And also then, too, I think you made the point as well, do you need public liability insurance? Would you have to gather money off of residents to cover any claims?
Yes, I would assume that, because, like, I know sort of where, actually, Parkview, where I live, is one of the estates mentioned yesterday with the council. I know we did lose a good few trees whenever the storm came along, like, but once again, whenever it was cleaned up, like, it was all sort of locals went out and cleaned it up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, because you didn't want to have to wait. In your area, there's a green area with trees on it. I mean, the council surely aren't saying residents are responsible for that.
No, It seems that that's what they are saying from my reading of it now, but maybe it'll be sort of open to interpretation, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get clarity on it, because I think that would be completely... If the landowner is responsible, the green area, surely the responsibility... And it's not commonage, you know what I mean? It's not like everybody in the estate owns a bit of it.
Exactly, no, because even the trees that did fall down in the storm just in my estate there, like, the houses are about, say, 20, 30 years old, and the trees are easily 60, 70.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
Okay. You've inherited the problem as much as anything else.
All right, listen, Paul, thank you as always. Roisin, just before the news, what's your view on this?
Good morning, Greg. Just to say, I was telling Caroline there that, say, for example, Lash Lawn is a pretty old estate, and I remember living there. And I think it was the Teddy Towns that supplied trees to the residents, you know, to plant them. Mm. So that's going back then. But in recent years, any new housing estate, there's a charge. Residents are supposed to pay a charge of, I think it's over €1,000. It's quite expensive. And that there is supposed to go towards the upkeep of the green areas, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
So Probably maybe you might get clarification on that there. But unfortunately, it's like everything else. Who's to oversee? You know, I know somebody belonging to me that was living in a housing estate, and apparently they discovered that only four or five of the residents were paying. Like, it's quite a big estate. But see, a lot of the houses are rented, so, you know, it's landlord owned, and there's nobody to oversee the paying of this rent. It's quite expensive. It's over €1,000. Mm. And that was supposed to be to pay for the cutting of the grass, you know, all the other
service charges, so, kind of thing. I think that's kind of, you'd see that a lot in Spain and Portugal in congregated living,
yeah,
where people pay an annual
that
fee.
That was introduced.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it was introduced in Ireland too, and people were paying it until they discovered then that everybody else in the estate wasn't paying it. I suppose really the idea was that there would be a committee set up and that they would take responsibility to get in a grass cutter, et cetera, et cetera. So, unfortunately, you know, where estates, there's nobody to oversee the cutting back of trees, etc. You know, they're overgrown. So maybe that Jerry McMonagall or whoever put this issue up would talk about this charge that was introduced. Mm. It was the developers, you know, it was the people that bought the houses. That was a condition. They actually, I think, they signed it at the time to say that they would pay this money.
And was
per
it
annum
a one-off? Okay, per annum. I wonder then when
it's a per annum. It's supposed to be a per annum.
I'm just wondering, once the council took over an estate, did they? I mean, obviously, you're no longer playing the contractor. I wonder, was that money then owed to the council? Did the council seek a contribution from residents in council-run estates?
Yeah, well, that's, I suppose like every estate is taken over by the council, but, you know, probably what needs to be done here is there needs to be clarification on the fact, are the council responsible just for the footpath and the tarmac adamant of the estate, or are they responsible for the green areas? But my understanding that there's definitely a charge that was it was introduced back a few years ago, but it's like everything else. If there's nobody to implement it or to make sure, as I said, was it up to the Residents Association to collect it? It certainly wouldn't be a very nice job to go around asking your neighbour, you know, for... So, as I said, maybe that's something that the council would clarify for people. You know, first of all, before they start talking about, you know, who's responsible for trees.
Okay.
And I mean, basically, most of the estates nowadays, there's not a blade of grass, there's not a tree, there's nothing planted. So
We could see more of that if why buy a house if you could be responsible for a fallen tree? Roisin, thanks so much for coming on as well to explain your point
all
of view.
Right,
I know
Greg,
you had an
okay
initial convo with Caroline. It's appreciated.